Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Dan, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Yo. Welcome to Tuesday Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score. Let me be emphatic about this. Many, many good contributions that first hour as we welcome you back to big program, Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. Bottom of the hour, talking duck foosball with Tyson Alger of The Athletic. By the way, here's how my mind works. So, I've got a debit card and a miles card. And certain things that I don't want to have to worry about, you know, that get auto-renewed, like my Netflix, and certain things, give them my credit card. So today, I get an email notification. Your subscription for The Athletic has been renewed. It was a year ago I first signed up. And I was like, you know what? I should get a hold of Tyson. And I did. That's exactly what triggered it. So is it weird to think, well, I'm paying for it. At least I can get the guy on the show. No, that's, delete that. That's not why I invited him on. He does a terrific job, and he's always a lot of fun to talk to. So we'll get him on at the bottom of the hour. We had a caller last hour talking about Ronnie Lee. They saw speak, you know, probably the most beloved kamikaze kid, one of the all-time favorite Oregon Ducks. When Matthew Knight Arena first opened, and Dana Altman had invited a lot of former Ducks. I remember a bunch of you, I don't know how the subject surfaced, but it was from that era. And I noticed something, and I kept, who was my producer back then? I think it might have been Joey Kieran. I mean, you're talking, it was right after the Natty, because they played Auburn on Monday, January, say 7th or something like that, 2011, they opened MKA against USC that Thursday. You know, it was Altman's first year. And I remember just the look on my face was like, and Dana Altman had invited a lot of former Ducks. I remember a bunch of you, I don't know how the subject surfaced, but it was from that era. And I noticed something, and I kept, who was my producer back then? I think it might have been Joey Kieran. I mean, you're talking, it was right after the Natty, because they played Auburn on Monday, January, say 7th or something like that, 2011. They opened MKA against USC that Thursday. You know, it was Altman's first year, and I remember just the look on my face was like, the way people talked about Ronnie Lee then, 40 years after he played, 1977, so 87, 97, 34, 35 years, it was like he just played Saturday, and he just won a big game with a buzzer beater. It's just the passion that dude ignites among some of you Oregon fans is frigging awesome. So our caller happened to mention, I think his name was Larry, happened to mention that he still had his deranged idiot button that the guy who took over for John Wooden, Gene Bartow, referred to the fans at Matt Court as deranged idiots. And we just had a picture tweeted out by at Annie Reader, and she's got her deranged idiot button, and she tweeted it at us. So I retweeted it. See, that's just beyond awesome. And I really appreciate that. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Allowing all of you to do our job, which, as you know, is my goal, do as little as possible while still earning full-time pay and benefits. And so far, you guys have played along very well for like 20 years. That said, Matt Prehm started a conversation today about the all-underrated Duck team for this decade, not this century. So that means that they would have had to have played at least if their last year was on the Rose Bowl team that lost to Ohio State, they don't qualify. We're starting it with being a member of the first team to play for the Natty 2010. And Joe Walker, Kiko Lacumbo, I just made a hybrid linebacker. By the way, combine those two guys, would be really good.
They would be, yes.
Kiko Alonso, Kiko Lacumbo.
Assuming it wasn't like a twin situation and you end up with a Danny DeVito as opposed to an Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No. I would love to see that hybrid dude. I was going to say Lance Mell. Jeff Mail. Lance Mell was a linebacker for the Jets in the 80s who went to Penn State. The greatness of the Raiders. Anyway, Seiko Lacumbo. Somebody mentioned Brandon Bear. And the cool thing is they pointed out, and I love you, the knowledge some of you have about this program. I mean, overall, sports-wise, I feel pretty good. Comfortable about that I'm up there, but some of you absolutely know more about me than the history of Oregon football and basketball. I concede that, and you actually fuel and upgrade my knowledge. So Brandon Bear, as you pointed out, coming out of Idaho, was recruited as a tight end. And by the way, the class of 2006, and you know, I look at some of the guys that are often forgotten, Jeremy Gibbs, Jameel Dowling, Dexter Manley II, Bear was, they were talking about, amazing, a first-team All-State defensive performer who initially signed his LOI in 2003, and then he went on his Mormon church mission, then came back, and you know, ended up having a pretty darn good college career and, you know, was a pass rusher. And, you know, he was the original hands-up guy, I mean, at 6'7". So good get there. One of you mentioned, if I had to pick my top 10 all-time favorite defensive Ducks, Michael Clay is on the list.
What are the other nine?
What?
Who are the other nine?
I'd have to take time, but he would make it. He would absolutely make the list.
I mean, how can you know then for sure he's on the top 10?
Because I just said so.
Is he eighth, but ninth,
because
first,
I just said
third?
So.
I mean, well, where's the rest of the list, Steve?
By the way, you could talk up Clay because he was from your neck of the wape, right?
He went to Valley's rival high school, Bellarmine. Michael Clay from San Jose, another name that would get thrown up.
Oh, no way. I'm so jealous I never knew that. That's quality stuff. That's real good stuff.
It's now two. That's my third good thing.
Yeah, you just
in 2 hours
the fact
of the show.
You're
today.
Still here is just ridiculous.
Man, I really to think I should have left, but here I am doing better.
Yeah, you actually stayed around and didn't make things worse. I don't know if I've ever been this impressed. I think Clay had a little TD in him. If memory serves, he stepped on the field as a freshman and played 4 years. And he was one of those guys who, beyond being a good athlete, had the basically, I would say, what, like a silly football IQ, because I remember him being out there, and we would talk about how he was like having an extended coach on the field. And I remember talking with Aliotti about that back in the day.
Was he the one that recovered the fumble in the Rose Bowl? Who did the dive on the sideline?
I don't know.
Was that my? I feel the picture's right over there. I could just look at it. I think
airborne.
I think I saw that picture on Twitter earlier.
That couldn't have been. I think he left in 2010. No. You're right.
Yeah. No. And then we've got another picture of Michael Clay right there by the door.
Wow, we are just littered with great ducks from this decade.
Yeah, he came here and ended up on the field. And as a freshman, I think it was because of injuries. You know, it was funny because you read his bio, and he was such a good player and so versatile. He was actually in the running to be a long snapper. And, I remember he was one of just three true freshmen to play that year. And remember, look at the years he played, by the way. The guys who played as freshmen, and there are only three of them, he played on the team that won the conference in 09. He played on the only unbeaten team since 1895 to win all their games in the regular season. I don't know if the other one counts as much because they played Willamette twice, Portland, and Oregon Agricultural College. And then in 2010 and 2011, he was one of the best players, one of the leading tacklers on the first Rose Bowl winning team. And in 2012, he's a member of the team that you can make a case is the best in program history, you know, with the lone loss to Stanford. And I don't know that we properly appreciate what a great player and a four-year player Michael Clay was. Fantastic. Absolutely on the list. A good get. I don't remember. He was, as far as, and like we said, he was Golden State Prep's All-Northern California first team. And he was a three-star recruit, four-star according to Rivals. But, I would say Michael Clay qualifies as being a little bit underrated.
He absolutely recovered the fumble in the Rose Bowl. It was, I don't know who caught the ball for Wisconsin, but he turned up the sideline, was getting tackled, and there was like a pack of three ducks that were trailing him, and two guys went in for the tackle, and Clay like kept running like he was going to be there in case he somehow slipped away on the sideline or whatever, but the ball landed on the ground, and there's Michael Clay, Superman, diving for it just right on the sideline. Was spectacular. That ball seemed, I was down in that end zone in like the third row with my dad watching that. That ball seemed to have bounced and sat there for what felt like an hour and a half. That ball just could not have either just bounced out of bounds and like it would have made everything so much more stressful, or somebody have just fallen on it any quicker than what happened. We also had a caller brought up DeForest Buckner. For his impact of the last decade as well. I know he ended up being
impact.
Didn't
he come here highly touted and dominate?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm willing to put him on the under. Underrated list.
Underrated. Underappreciated.
How could he be? Wasn't he picked in the first round?
Yeah, that's true.
Not a lot of underrated guys.
Well,
somebody brought up Charles Nelson, who switched different positions every year, including special teams,
right,
and played right off as a freshman. He DB, running the ball, receiving, returning. Hieronis Grassou, somebody brought up, but he was also a great player on a great team who was drafted in the second round by the Bears. How he performed in the NFL doesn't come into play, but I don't know how underrated you could be if an NFL scout was like, that guy's great, I want him with our second pick.
I always thought, was it Jake Fisher? I always thought his importance to the offensive line for that Oregon team after Chip left and Helf was taken, I thought he was like an incredibly important piece, and then he just like nothing ever worked with him in the NFL. I think the last I heard of him, he was like signed to be a tight end.
Who?
Was it Fisher?
Jake Fisher, offensive lineman?
Yeah. I always really liked his play in him for some reason. I don't know why.
All right, and for those who've been chiming in with Patrick Chung, no. For a simple reason, it's this decade and his last year. He was drafted in the 2009 draft. Josh Huff, somebody brought up. Remember, he was a rarity, especially on offense. Chip did not like to play true freshman on offense, and Huff started right off. He was a terrific player and even had an NFL. Did he have a cup of tea, or did he play about 3 years in the league? I'm trying to WMB, rack my brain. Drafted third round draft pick in the NFL. Like I said, he might be a favorite. A critically important player for the 2010, 11, 12, and 13 Ducks. I don't know if he falls into the underrated category. But anyway, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Somebody brought up Nick Reed, and they qualified it. He was drafted, or was he undrafted, and ended up with the Seahawks? But I don't think he made it into the 2010s. Yeah, again, he was drafted 7th round, 2009. So again, we could all just start throwing names out. Let's try and make sure we knew they played in this decade. Okay. Thank you very little. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
Has anybody brought up EFO? I forgot what he came in as, like a recruit or anything, but I know the way things ended and how nothing really panned out for him at the next level, he kind of got forgotten about, but he was another damn good cornerback. Like, Oregon's had a really good run on really good pass protecting defensive backs who can, or just, you know, big hitters in the secondary, something like that. I think EFO just like maybe also flies under the radar, not as under the radar as a lot of other guys necessarily, but I think he's
and
he might
EFO,
be down
if
there.
Memory would serve me correctly, was one of somebody texted Dan Fouts. I'm sorry. If you have a Twitter account, get on and do that. That might be a lock tweet of the day. EFO was one of those guys, correct me if I'm wrong, in 2011. Who, because of injury, was forced into action, I believe, as a true freshman. And, injuries have cost him an opportunity to get his NFL career going. But, you know, you go back to that, you know, if you go back to the... So I've got the Civil War depth chart from 2011 up, and be it Troy Hill, Boyette, Eddie Pleasant, Anthony Gildon, somebody got injured early, and EFO was the only true freshman. T. Mitch and Troy Hill were redshirts who played that year, but EFO got pushed into... action really quickly, and like Nick said, he was a terrific player. You know, you look at that defense in 2011 with Kadu and Clay, Deion Jordan, Taylor Hart, Terrell Turner. By the way, Taylor Hart was the guy that I mentioned who I thought would make the all-underrated team. John Boyette, Avery Patterson, Eddie Pleasant, Anthony Gildon, Terrence Mitchell. Damn, that was a good team. Oh, by the way, I guess they did win the Rose Bowl. Came very close to running the table in conference, if not for missed kick or two against USC. But anyway, yeah, good contributions there. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yeah, I got to tell you guys who are talking about Troy Hill and John Boyette, I seem to remember Oregon fans absolutely love those guys. I don't know if the fact that you remember them so quickly, I don't know about underrated. Somebody mentioned Eric Dargan, kind of a good all-purpose player who history might not render etched in the minds of Oregon fans for eternity, but certainly a good player. Man, just looking at that, Ricky Heimule, Brandon Hanna, Tony Washington as backups on that defensive line. And remember, that was in the days of the ultra blur. So they really rotated guys in. I mean, Kiko that year was actually listed as a backup to DeWitt Stuckey. Derek Malone, a really good player, listed as a backup to Michael Clay. I mean, you look at the depth and the guys who got NFL shots. My goodness, that's a... that's some quality stuff there. 284-8571. That's your Oregon fuel injection hotline if you'd like to jump on in. I felt like this week would be a good time to kind of celebrate the program on the heels of the Pac-12 championship. So if you want in, again, multiple ways, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. You can hit us up via the text line, 321-0824. Try us via Twitter at 953 the score for the station. For the show, it is at Sports Talk 953. For Nick, it is at Rick Nodgers. All right, just a couple of other news tidbits and notes from around the world of sports before we wander on into our break. So, in fact, The release from the Oregon Athletic Department, Oregon's offensive line is, in fact, one of the four finalists for the Joe Moore Award. I guess I don't need to repeat myself saying it's for the top offensive line. I'll tell you what, they were up for, like, the Biletnikoff Award. That would be amazing. But based on Penei Sewell's catch and not-so-elusive move, I'm going to say maybe leave that best to the pass catchers.
I completely forgot about that play call until just now. Can you imagine if that worked? Like, Marcus Arroyo is like, you know, Pac-12 championship game, Herbert's going to run the ball. We're going to run over the best defense in the conference. We're going to throw a pass to our left tackle, who is technically eligible on the play because of the formation. Like, what?
Let me tell you, you know how that play works? If they are totally baffled. I mean, seriously, for a lineman with the ball, I know they're good athletes. I think if one guy makes the read, I'm just guessing he's pretty easy to tackle.
He got flipped, too. Yeah, like, that was a weird, like,
because he's not a pass
receiver. They got helicoptered around. That was crazy.
Yeah, that was one of those plays where you look at it, and it's like, deception! And within a second, you're like, that's not going to be a touchdown. That play is designed for just one of those deals where he rumbles in with nobody on that side of the field, anything else, and it blows up. But, I did not. You know what's interesting? I didn't see who else were among the finalists for the award. Oh, maybe because I only printed the one page and I maxed it out at 100% on the printer. I'll find that out. I still got the email. Well, the outstanding thing is five different Duck linemen were named that Pro Football Focus Pac-12 Team of the Week. You know, Sewell did it 9 times. Lemieux 5 times, Warmack 4. And according to that organization, PFF, Pro Football Focus, they only allowed 5 sacks. The offensive line allowed 5 sacks this season. So they do a deep dive into that. But either way, before we take a break, I cannot believe all of this recruiting information that I still have. It's like 3/4 of an inch thick. I've got every recruiting packet they hand out since 2005. Before we break, a quick shout out to our friends at our triumvirate of fabulous pubs, Public House in Springfield on A Street. They've got live music every Wednesday and Friday on the Arbor Bar stage. They've also upgraded their available food. Again, publichousehub.com online. Tap and Growler, the original, 81 strong, biggest tap list in town. Fifth and Pearl, downtown Eugene, across from the Fifth Street Public Market. They do something that I think is really cool. Industry Day every Sunday. If you work in the service industry, they'll discount you a bit on food and beverage. Online, tapandgrowler.com, and Beer Garden on West 6th, heading towards the Whitaker. They've got live music every Thursday and Saturday, all ages, all are welcome, never a cover, beergardenme.com. And with all three, like them on Facebook, follow on Twitter, Tap and Growler, Beer Garden, Public House. All right, break time, we'll come back, we'll have an update, and we'll talk some Duck football with our buddy Tyson Alger of The Athletic next, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at Guarantee.com.
To the 38-yard line of Oregon. Here's Shuck, hand the ball off to Felix, cut it up the middle, and bye-bye! He's at the 30, he's at the 20, foot race 10, 5, touchdown, Darren Felix!
Can't stop effort. People are going to go, what are you doing? Hey, this guy's wanting to play and compete and make plays.
Jorgie almost tried to sneak a what are you doing in there? That's Darian Felix, who entered the transfer portal today. That was his last touchdown as a Duck against Nevada. He also had one against Auburn. All right, welcome back. What are we? Sports Talk. That's right. That's right. 95.3 The Score. Very delighted you've decided to join us. Yeesh. It's only 4:30. It's like dark and dreary and miserable out there. I'm so happy we've got the blinds drawn. Who needs that? It affects the mood. Going to lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Feel free to text us. Man, have you guys hit us with an awful, awful, awful lot of good information. Somebody mentioned Panay Sewell is made the finalist for the Outland Trophy, Best Interior Lineman. And they wanted to know, has a sophomore ever won that? It's funny. No, the answer is never until the last 2 years. Ed Oliver of Houston in 2017, Quinnen Williams of Alabama last year. So, yeah. Literally learn something new every day. All right, let's lock it down. Talk some Duck football. He's the fine sports journalist for The Athletic. I was actually reminded to reach out to him today when the notification came that my annual subscription had auto-renewed. The pride of the Montana School of Journalism on Twitter, use at Tyson Alger, who joins us now. TA, appreciate the time. How's life?
Hey, it's pretty good. I hope that auto-renew was a happy moment for you there.
It was. I literally saw it. I got the email, and I was like, I need to reach out to TA. Thus, here we are. You never know how you're going to make a connection. It's awesome. So, a lot of chatter today. The All-Pac-12 honorees. So, Oregon wins the division in a walk, crushes the only other team in the national mix, get one member on the first team all defense, kind of limited representation. You think the fans or the program is a little justified in feeling a tad snubbed?
Yeah, I think so a little bit. I mean, Oregon was the best team in the conference this year, and for much of the season they were like that. And I think especially when you look at how well the defense played, you would assume there'd be more first or second teamers. That being said, I thought this season was a defense that was like better than the sum of its parts.
Right.
And that's not to say Oregon doesn't have really good players on that defense, but this wasn't a year where one or two players just really stood out. I thought the Ducks were just really good across multiple positions, and so, you know, it wasn't just one guy that was completely carrying this team. And so, you know, I do think that they probably should have had a couple more guys on there. I mean, you can look at like Thomas Graham or Diamador Lenore or Javon Holland, but overall, I mean, I think that's kind of a tip of its cap, just like how good this team was as a team overall.
Yeah, Holland was the one that kind of stood out to me. So I ran a Twitter theory by, if Oregon doesn't overwhelmingly pack the all-conference list on both sides of the ball, yet they win the conference in convincing fashion, Wouldn't that make Cristobal coach of the year? I mean, my logic was, if he's got the best players, then maybe it's Whittingham or Smith. But if not, how did he not do the best job? Does my theory hold any water, Tyson?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could. I think it was a pretty tough three coach race this season, and I think Kyle Whittingham has done such a good job in Salt Lake City and has oftentimes been overlooked that, you know, it's hard for me to be like, man, like, Whittingham got it again. But that being said, I mean, the Ducks went 10-2. They're Pac-12 champions. Cristobal has done a phenomenal job in the offseason, not only with recruiting, but with his coaching hires. And for them to do this year, I mean, I think he completely could have been warranted winning that. I also think you could look at Jonathan Smith and
yep.
the drastic improvement of Oregon State and be like, oh, man, that guy certainly deserved it as well.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, he's got the one award everybody wanted, and that's that trophy that they just won. Talking with Tyson Alger at The Athletic. So you work for a major national outlet. You work in a major metro area. You're active on social media. You get feedback from fans and colleagues. Tyson, before Friday's kickoff, did you come across anybody who really thought the Ducks would literally dominate and kind of kick Utah's rear end? Because I didn't.
No, not at all. I mean, so we do our weekly Pac-12 roundtable on The Athletic, and I think
right.
coming into the game, I think there was two of us, and I say us because it's not including myself, that picked Oregon to win that game. I thought Utah was going to win it, and I thought Utah was going to win it convincingly, and apparently I'm an idiot. I thought Oregon could win that game. You know, when Oregon plays, it's really at its best. They've been a phenomenal team. I just didn't know if they were going to do that against Utah, a team that's been more consistent than them this year. And boy, they proved me wrong. I mean, Oregon, that 4 quarters of football Oregon played there was the best game I've seen them play all year. And frankly, if they play like that in the Rose Bowl, I don't think Wisconsin can hang with them, because that was a complete game of football for Oregon, minus maybe about like 5 or 6 minutes in the third quarter, where you saw this offense and defense both play completely to the level of their potential and expectations.
Yeah, I need to correct one thing to go for a Seinfeld. For it's my show, I am Costanza, Lord of the Idiots, so don't sell me short there. Kayvon Thibodeau. His performance, blocked punt, you know, he was terrorizing the pocket. And yeah, he had some great moments all season. So not only about he played in this game, Tyson, but do we just remove the ceiling for what he might accomplish these next 2 years? Because I just see offensive coaches staying up nights because of this guy.
Boy, it seemed pretty outlandish in August when he was predicting 10 sacks on the season, especially after the first 4 games where I don't think he recorded a single one. So it's pretty incredible to look at his season, and not only the 9 sacks, but I think he finished pretty high up there in tackles for a loss amongst the conference. And this is all for a defensive end who, you know, right now is just a freshman and still has a lot of room to grow physically. But, you know, the one thing that he's always said this year is that he really prides himself on technique and being able to kind of maneuver his way around guys and not just completely rely on size like he was able to in high school. And I mean, you could just see him learning and improving every week. And by the end of the season, I mean, he was Oregon's best defensive player on the field on Friday. And it seems like it's clicking for him, and he's getting almost exponentially better every week. And so I know after that game, I saw there was a couple NFL draft guys on Twitter that were saying, like, the 2021 or 22,
right.
whatever you would be, number one pick is Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon.
Speaking of guys who played pretty well Friday, Brady Breeze, who had a fumble return for a score, a pick six, and at times Friday, I thought there were a couple of 25s out there, and obviously being from Portland, you've probably been aware of him since his Central Catholic days. So what about A, surviving that 50-50 call on targeting, then playing the game of his life in the biggest game of his life?
Yeah, that honestly, I thought he was going to be kicked out from that targeting call. I've seen ones this year where players have gone
yep.
out for less. Then again, I mean, like, I think a lot of those ones have been, you know, accidental and that sort of thing. So obviously Oregon caught a huge break there. And Brady Breeze hits hard. for a guy who doesn't look all that physically imposing out there, he throws his body at guys. He's not afraid to do that. And I think the big lesson about Brady Breeze is it proves that players can improve over time. I think in this kind of world of recruiting with like 5 stars and 4 stars, and everyone's expecting like those freshmen to contribute immediately, Brady Breeze has taken his time. He redshirted. He took several years to kind of get antiquated within the system, and now you're seeing a guy that's matured and learned how to play football at this level, and he's been phenomenal. And I think it just goes to show that people develop at different rates in the sport.
No, that's a great take. A couple final thoughts for Tyson Alger of The Athletic. When you think of 2016, Troy Dye steps on the field game one against UC Davis and kind of a rare bright light on that awful defense, and to see beyond the great play, but kind of the joy and the passion he plays with to get that interception kind of one-handed and go out like this. I mean, how cool of a storyline is it for him? I mean, you're a writer. You love a good storyline. How cool is this one?
I'm going to miss Troy Dye a lot. Not only in seeing like his evolution as a player, but seeing where he's come from, you know, from that 2016 season where, like you said, he was one of the few bright spots on that one of the worst Oregon defenses ever, to essentially sealing the Pac-12 title game with that club-handed interception. I don't think there's anybody who appreciates that journey more than him, and I don't think there's anybody on this team that's having more fun. I mean, it's impossible not to just see him enjoying every moment of this, and I think he's definitely etched himself into the Oregon history books as kind of an all-time player here.
Oh, absolutely. And finally, while some, I don't know, maybe kind of fans who might be a little semi-delusional, a little disappointed, you know, the playoff dream died in Tempe, but now here they get to play Wisconsin, a terrific back like Jonathan Taylor, a top-notch Big Ten program for like the last 25 years. Fair to say this looks like a really great matchup, and kind of the stage is set for a real traditional, like a heck of a Rose Bowl.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely excited for this one. And for anybody that's complaining that, oh, Oregon's only in the Rose Bowl, like, okay, you can go back and watch that 7-6 Red Box from last year and enjoy that one. I mean, this is Mario Cristobal's second season as head coach. They went 11-2 now at this point. They're playing a traditional powerhouse team that is kind of almost has a similar identity as the Ducks. So obviously Cristobal is going to love kind of this big physical trench warfare type game. It's going to be great. It's going to be a great football game. Both teams have a ton of talent across the board. It's fun to be in the Oregon realm of the football world these days, because Cristobal and that staff have done an excellent job of getting them back to this point, just several years after it looked like it all hit rock bottom.
No. Great takes as always, folks. He's Tyson Alger. Catch his work now for The Athletic. Keep up on Twitter. The handle is at Tyson Alger. TA, always appreciate the time. Thanks a million for joining us. And we shall talk again soon, sir. Thanks a lot, man.
Hey, can't wait, Steve. Thanks.
All right, take it easy. Good stuff from TA as always. He's, you know, he had that piece on Thomas Tyner and just, you know, some real top notch sports journalism. All right, before we break, a little update. I've been telling you about the Josh Cooley team and the enclave at the Nines over located at Ayers Road and Delta Highway, that housing subdivision. Well, the completed homes have all been sold, but now they've got 3 different floor plans being completed in the next month, which are available. 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom, 1,900 to 2,200 square feet. These new models have bigger backyards. And, locally, the newer homes traditionally have a smaller plot. No. Not the case here. High quality finishes, fully landscaped, super high efficiency. And the model home is open, so you can come over and take a look for yourself. Check out the website, EugeneEnclave.com. And, of course, buying, selling. Why would you deal with anybody but the best in the business? Call Josh and his team, 359-1999. And like I said, if you're buying or selling, that's the number to call the Josh Cooley team. All right, break time is upon us. We'll do just that, and we'll return, and we'll wrap up the 4 o'clock hour sports talk next, 95.3 The Score.
The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
History tells us a seven-year deal for a pitcher in his 30s is not a good idea. But in this day and age, when Scott Boras is representing people, this is the going rate. So Strasburg's in incredible shape. He's one of these kids that would never do anything to affect him being really good this year, so I think he will be.
Welcome you back. Sports Talk 95.3, The Score, home stretch of the 4 o'clock hour. Tim Kirkjian. I agree. That's a lot of years for a guy who has not exactly been durability innings eater Jones. Strasburg, obviously, off a fantastic... By the way, when you talk about timing, that would be an interesting research project for a downtime. Go through either the NBA or MLB and said, who had the best walk year? Who was going to be playing for a big-time contract and, like, won the World Series MVP and had the best year of their career like Strasburg did? That would be pretty interesting. 'Cause truth be told, like, Bryce Harper didn't. He had a good year. He's a good player, but and he wound up getting the ranch. I don't know if you could do much more your first year after signing a big deal than Reggie did, leading a team to the World Series and winning your second series MVP award. That's a research projet for another day. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yeah, a couple of you have hit me with some hot stove texts. Not hot takes, hot stove texts. Yeah, so the Nats are making inquiry under the assumption that their third baseman for the World Series Champignons, Anthony Rendon, will leave to Chris Bryant of the Cubs or free agent Josh Donaldson. So that's interesting. Didi Gregorius signed a one-year deal with Filthy. Not happy about that. The Braves, with the concept of losing Donaldson, might be looking at Rendon. The Twins, who surprised a lot of people by winning the American League Central, they re-upped Michael Pineda. They gave Jake Odorizzi a qualifying offer. And they are in talks with Madison Bumgarner.
No.
Ryu. Dallas Keuchel. You're really going to be like a... You're going to be, admit it, little kid heartbroken if they lose Bummy, the Giants, won't you?
I'm trying to work myself up into that state because, like, back in July at the trade deadline, I was all in on just, like, please, Giants, like, don't buy into the fact that you won, like, you know, whatever, it was like, 15 out of 17, or they went on run, and it was, like, just
they
good.
Flirted for, like, a week.
Right, and everybody's like, oh, is this the Giants for real? Have they figured things out? No. Bruce Bochy's last season? Are they going to do something great? And I was just like, no, it's just please sell high. Like, all of these guys have more value now than they're going to have pretty much ever. You're getting older. Just take on money. Take on some prospects. They got some good ones with the trades that they made. They absolutely fleeced the Braves by giving them Mark Melancon, and they're paying for his contract. Woo! Oh, boy.
Very David Justice in Moneyball.
I mean, build Farhan Zaidi a bigger statue. I don't know how big the statue is going to be. Make it 15 feet taller because of that trade alone. Put him in the Hall of Fame. That was incredible. But now I'm trying to work myself up into this emotional state of like, okay, you're going to lose Bumgarner. It's going to be a big deal. But I'm at the same time, I'm like, this Giants team is just going to be completely, the roster turnover is going to be major. The GM doesn't really care about the players that are there. He wants to make it his team. You've got, you know, Gabe, Mr. Muscles, Kapler is the new manager. Like, that's different. I'm just kind of, I'm not buying into their whole movement of what they're doing. And I think I'm okay with Bumgarner leaving, you know?
You are going to be very interested in our sound that comes out at our first break of the 5 o'clock hour.
It's good tea, Steve.
So we will push that there.
I guess I'll stay listening.
So sources say the what the Yankees are going to do with Gerrit Cole is going to eclipse Steven Strasburg. He is going to be the highest paid player ever for probably dinner tonight.
Do you think he gets more money than the Trout contract? Trout, I think his extension was I think he got pushed into 400.
Really? Why don't I remember that? I'm not doubting you. I just like...
Well, now I'm doubting
it's
myself.
For a pitcher. I guess they're talking about record for a pitcher. Yeah, because...
What did Mike Trout get? Just a 12-year, $426,500,000 contract. And I think they got him at a bargain.
Yeah, 8 years from now, whatever he's making, it'll be like 17th or something like that.
He's going to... Oh, my God. Mike Trout, with a no-trade clause, will be 38 years old playing for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim and Long Beach, making $38 million.
That's a good future to have.
Fully guaranteed.
And the funny thing is how it dwarfed Harper's, who got that insulting, 13 years, $330 million deal. So, we went through all those years where it was like Kevin Brown got the biggest deal, and then it was Kershaw, and now Stevie Strasburg, and now it's going to be... Gerrit Cole. So he is probably going to get more than 7 to 45. So originally it was David Price got 7 years, just over 210 mil. So he became the highest total contract and then money per year. That beat Zach Greinke, who was at the time making a paltry $31.5 million. And it's strange because New York has not made that commitment for more than 5 years. You're coming up on tossed 175 mil. So what they're talking about, so weird to hear, a nine-figure deal. I mean, it's like most of us would fantasize about a six-figure deal. Well, you got seven? No more. Eight? No more. Nine.
Sign him for a decade.
Now, what happened was when they traded for Johnny Stanton, they assumed $265 million. And now with Cole, who is turning, I think, 29, did we say? This year, yeah, he was 29. He finished second to Verlander, but he was 20-5 with a 2.5 ERA, and he had 300. By the way, his whiffs to innings is Randy Johnson like silly. He had 326 in 2.12. I mean, that's just filth. So, the Yankees are back to being Yankees. I guess either Hal or Hank had George come to them in a dream, like standing over the bed. You will sign Gerrit Cole. You will sign him.
Anything less than $300 million is going to be a steal for whoever gets Cole. Considering what Strasburg just got for what he's done, I think Cole is going to be better and probably last longer than Strasburg. $300 million would be a steal, which would put him tied for fourth all-time with Manny Machado, the money that the Padres gave him.
It's so weird. I kind of forgot about him.
Right.
And all the dough he got. 300?
Just a major superstar in a pretty big market, just kind of doing very okay.
Well, with this crazy deal that is being talked about now and what Harper got, it's like, oh, yeah, and by the way, the afterthought that San Diego sprung. All right, I'll take a break. We'll be back. It's the 5 o'clock hour next, 95.3, The Score.
It's Henley.